I want to begin with a kind of a personal question, and I want you to think about this. It's simple, but yet it's deep. Where do you find your identity and your meaning in life? What gives you meaning? How do you see yourself? The world around us teaches us that things like identity and meaning are found in wealth, power, prestige, making a name for ourselves. And yet if you were a person who did not read Scripture or was not familiar with the Word of God, there would be some names that would not be familiar to you. You might not recognize names like Enoch or Noah or Rahab or Hannah or Samuel or Ruth, Elijah, Daniel, Peter, John, Paul. But we know those individuals were prominent individuals in God's sight. Individuals who were faithful individuals before Him. And these names are precious to Him because they belong to what Hebrews chapter 11 would call the faithful. And I believe that's what each one of us this morning long to be, is the faithful of God. We want to be His, don't we? We want to love Him. We want to serve Him. Give me the Bible, star of gladness gleaming. We talk about the unclouded day. They tell me of a home far beyond the skies. We long for that. We long for the day when we can be with Him and be in His presence. And you see, in God's kingdom, God reverses life's values and expectations. What the world considers important, what the world strives for, God says that's not important. There are other things that are far more important. And what Jesus calls us to do, you and me, is to walk upstream, to go against the current of the world around us, to live life differently. Our reading this morning addresses that very issue. Because Jesus is speaking to us through the ages about how we should live our lives, who it is we should seek, who it is that should be important to us, and how we are to make a difference in this world. And so this morning I want to draw your attention back to all of that. I only had verses 7 through 14 read by Pott this morning. I really want to pick up with verse 1 and move down through verse 14 because the entire episode of this chapter is set up by what happens in the first six verses. And as you go back and look at the first six verses, you find that it's a setup. What I mean by that is that Jesus has been invited to the home of a Pharisee to enjoy a Sabbath meal. As we find it happened that when He went into the house, one of the leaders of the Pharisees on the Sabbath ate bread. They were watching Him closely, and there in front of Him was a man suffering from dropsy. So He has gone into this house with this Pharisee to eat bread on the Sabbath. This bread would have been prepared the day before on Friday, because to prepare bread on Saturday, the Sabbath day, was a violation. It was considered work, and so they were not to do that. So they prepared their meals a day ahead and then enjoyed them on the Sabbath. And so Jesus is there, and Luke tells us that the Pharisees are watching Him closely. They want to see what He's going to do. What's He going to do next? And He tells us the reason they're watching Him. There's a man there. A man actually in front of Him. We're told that the man is suffering from dropsy. I've never paid attention to dropsy. Didn't know what dropsy was until I started looking it up. Edema is probably more of a term we're familiar with. But this man has fluid that is built up in his body, around his limbs, his skin, his joints. And the fluid buildup is caused by something else, another medical issue that's going on with him that we're not told about. But Jesus sees this man. And the fact that the Pharisees are watching Jesus suggests a trap. They probably have even invited this man to this meal, which is really something that they would frown upon with anybody else doing it on the Sabbath day. in order to see how's Jesus going to respond. And Jesus has been noticing all of this, and so he asked them a question. It's a legal question, if you will. It is this: is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? You see, Jesus already knows what these Pharisees are thinking because he knows people's hearts. And he knows that they're wondering whether or not, in their minds, he is going to violate the Sabbath law. Because, you see, they understood that healing was a work, and you didn't work on the Sabbath, so to heal somebody on the Sabbath was to violate the Sabbath law. We saw that just a few weeks ago as we looked at Luke chapter 13, verse 14. The synagogue ruler who condemned the people for bringing their sick to Jesus on the Sabbath to be healed. He says, you have 6 days in which to work. Come and be healed on those days. And so Jesus asked this simple question. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? The Pharisees did not want to answer. And there was a reason. If they said to him, it is lawful. It is lawful to heal on the Sabbath. Then that would mean that they were going back on their traditions and going back on what they themselves taught. So they would be hypocrites. You teach this, but now you're telling me I can. If they said no, it's not lawful for you to heal on the Sabbath, then people would look at them and they would begin to think, well, wait a minute, you're standing against Jesus doing good for this man and showing compassion for him. Do you not care about the plight of this individual? Do you not want him to be well? We can't say yes, we can't say no. And then on top of that is another issue. If they invited this man here in order to entrap Jesus, and then they prevented Jesus from healing him, then the question is going to be, then why did you invite him here in the first place? Was this just as a show, just as an effort to try to trap Jesus in something? What kind of people are you? So what do? They don't say a word. They're silent. They don't open their mouths. On a previous occasion, in a synagogue, on a Sabbath day, Jesus had encountered, if we go back to Luke chapter 6, Jesus had encountered a man with a withered hand. And he had asked on that occasion, the scribes and the Pharisees who were there, who were also, if you go back to Luke chapter 6, they too were watching him closely, he had asked them, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath to save life or to destroy it? So Jesus had already demonstrated what he was going to do. He was going to heal this man because he had healed another individual on the Sabbath day. He didn't allow it to stop him from doing the good. On this occasion, as I said, they remained silent. They hadn't learned a single thing from what they had seen him do on other Sabbath days, the fact that he had healed and done good. Their silence doesn't mean that they're giving their approval. It just means they don't want to say anything because they would be trapped any way they go. So on this occasion, as on other occasions, he does good by healing the man. Luke tells us that he took hold of him and healed him. I don't know how he took hold of him. I don't know if he hugged him, if he just grabbed his hand. I don't know if he grabbed him by the shoulders. I don't know, but he took hold of him and he healed him, and then he sent him on his way. They still didn't say a word. And so then Jesus does something else. He comes back and he asks them a second question. And he's taking the offensive. He's defending his action. He's going at them. And he points out to them that you would do the same thing in the situation that you might find yourselves. And so the question is this: which one of you will have a son or an ox fall into a well and will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day? If your son falls into a well, are you going to say, well, I'm sorry, son, I'll be back tomorrow to pull you out, but for now, you've just got to stay in the well. Hope you do okay. The ox, oh, well, I'll get it out tomorrow. May need to plow my fields. Hopefully it'll be okay. No. You're going to rescue your son. Why? Because it's the natural human response to someone who is in need. Jesus appealed to their sense of compassion. You care for people. You don't want to see someone hurting. He appealed to their sense to rescue someone. You don't want someone that's caught in something they cannot get out of. You want to help. And so his point is that these same concerns should also be applied to these human relationships, even on God's day of rest. That you would still do good, you would still care about your fellow man, you would still try to help and heal if at all possible. What do? They don't say a word. They're quiet. Their inconsistency has been exposed. And no reply that they might give would stand up to scrutiny. You see, they stand condemned. So this is what begins everything that happens on this day in this house of this Pharisee as Jesus is there to enjoy a meal. But Jesus has been doing a little watching of his own, as you may have noticed from our reading this morning, because he's been watching them and how they are behaving as they're coming into the house of this Pharisee for this meal. And so he begins addressing a problem that is present among them. It is the problem of pride. And what he says to them during all this time is he's been watching them as they've come in and how they've sought out the seats of honor. And he's been noticing how they do that. The seats of honor in that day and time were the seats next to the host or next to the head of the house, right on both sides. And the tables in that day and time probably were more of a U-shaped, where the head of the house would sit right here, or the host would, and then others would spread out around them. The closer you were to the host, that's where the seats of honor were. And so when they came in, well, I am somebody. I'm going to sit right here beside this host. They sought out the seats of honor. Pharisees and scribes were noted for seeking out such places. Jesus condemned them on more than one occasion. In Matthew 23, which is where he keeps calling the Pharisees hypocrites, he says, "Woe to you scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites." If you'll notice in Matthew 23 and verse 6, he says, and he's speaking to the crowd at large on that day, he says, they, these Pharisees and scribes, they love the place of honor at banquets in the chief seats in the synagogues. They search those places out. What Jesus is saying to us is that our attitude toward God is seen in how we treat each other. God looks at how we respond to each other, how we treat one another, and he says, okay, this is how you really feel toward me, because I see the way you respond to others around you. If you kind of push others out of the way so that you can have your way, if you start seeking out the chief seats, looking for the best places, looking for the prestige, looking to be noticed, he said, you really don't know me. So here he begins to tell them, here's what you don't do. You know, we've heard of lessons in etiquette, what you do and what you don't do, how you do things. He gives them a lesson in humility. And basically what he says is, don't take the place of honor. Don't go to the seat of honor. As he says, when you're invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor. And he tells us why. It may be that someone more prominent than you may come in, and then what will happen is that the host, the head of the house, may come to you and say, Tom, I need you to move down there because this gentleman right here, this was going to be his seat. And then what have you got to do? You've got to get up out of your chair with everybody watching you. And you've got to move down to the last seat on the table. And does anybody notice that? Oh, everybody notices that. Did you see that? He made him move. Oh, boy. Put him in his place, didn't he? You see? It's embarrassing. And you don't want to be caught in that position. And so Jesus is saying, don't go trying to pick out the chief seat. Don't look for the best place. What are we to do? He's telling us when he says don't choose the best place is don't overestimate your own importance. I'm somebody. What does he say do? He said instead of looking for the place of honor, you go ahead and take the last seat. You look for the furthest away from the head of the table. And then, when the host comes, it may be that what the host will do is he may come to you and say, Tom, I really want you to sit up here by me. Hey, come on up, come on up. Or sit right here. And then when you get up and you move up, everybody knows, wow, he thinks a lot of Tom. Tom's pretty important to him. His point, it is better for others to recognize you than for you to promote yourself. You see, humility should govern our lives. I dare say that any of you who've ever been involved in any kind of public service have encountered at least one time in your life someone who has come to you and let you know, don't you know who I am? Don't you realize how important I am? You need to treat me this way instead of this way over here. You don't treat me like everyone else. I deserve some special attention here. Jesus says, no. Go to the last seat. Let others recognize your importance. Let them make note of that. You see, what Jesus wants us to do is let humility govern our lives. And it's not only true in our personal relationships with one another, but it's true in our relationship with God. We find it throughout the Scriptures. If you go to Romans chapter 12, there in verse 16, Paul's giving a list of how we are to treat others and how we are to live our lives. And here's what he says, be of the same mind toward one another. In other words, you treat everybody the same. You don't treat one person, well, you're down here in my estimation, but oh, you're way up here. No, you treat everybody the way you would want them to treat you. That's the golden rule anyway, isn't it? As we often say. And then he says, do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. And he adds, do not be wise in your own estimation. In other words, don't overestimate yourself. James, if you look in his work, James chapter 4, first of all, verse 6, and then down in verse 10, here's what James says. He said, God is opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. And then down in verse 10, he adds, humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, and what? He will exalt you. God gives grace to the humble. Humble yourself in God's presence. If there is exalting to be done, God will take care of that. God will recognize that. So that's about how we are to be as guests, how we are to respond to those around you. But then there's another thing. It's what about the people that we invite? Who do we bring in? Who do we say, come eat with me, come fellowship with me? He tells us, first of all, who not to invite. And it's those who can reciprocate, those who can repay us for what we have done for them. He says, don't invite your friends, your family, your relatives, your wealthy neighbors. And when he says, do not invite, he isn't saying, the wording there in the original language is not never invite them. It is a word of habitual invitation. And what he is in essence really saying is, don't invite them exclusively. Don't make these the only people that you invite to eat with you or to have a meal with you. And the reason he tells us it is because to invite those people is to expect some kind of repayment at some point. You know, I've eaten at your house, or you've eaten at my house. Invite me over to your house sometime. Do the same that I've done for you. And what Jesus is in essence saying is that pay back hospitality. That's the best way to identify it. Pay back hospitality is of no great merit to God. Is it really hospitality when you know, well, they're going to repay me sometime for what I've done for them? They're going to have me in their house for a good meal because I had them in my house for a good meal. You see, it's hospitality that can be exchanged. I invite you, you invite me. No, what he's saying is that our fellowship should not have social limits. We shouldn't say, well, I don't really affiliate with those people. God calls upon us to practice a hospitality that is given without any expectation of return or repayment. And so he comes back and says, so who do you invite? And he tells us that the ones that we invite are the ones who cannot repay, the ones who cannot reciprocate. Here's the way he put it. He says, instead, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. And he says, they can't repay you. They could never repay you for what you've done for them. And you don't do it to make points with God or to say, look at me because I'm doing this for these people. No, it's not the reason you do it. It's because of what's been done for you. There is not a single one of us in this room who can ever repay God for what God has done for us.
Amen.
We cannot repay the sacrifice, the love, the mercy, the grace that has been bestowed upon us by our Father. And in the same way, we give, knowing that we have been blessed beyond anything we could ever repay. We give out of a humility that says, I just want to show my gratitude to God for what He's done for me, and I want to do this for someone else. This is the hospitality that pleases God. It is a hospitality that practices a generosity without any expectation of return or of someone giving back. You know what Jesus promises? He promises that you will have a reward. It won't come from those that you do this for. It will come from the God who provides it for you. And what is that reward? That reward is you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. God will repay you on the last day. Let me ask you, how are we living our lives? Do we elevate ourselves? Do we lift ourselves up? Do we expect others to notice us? Or are we busy saying, I have been blessed so much, I want to do for others. I want to care for others. I want to show others the God that I serve. And in humility, I want to serve Him in a way that honors Him, that draws glory and praise to Him. You and I have been blessed. And if you go, and we've heard it, the second commandment, the greatest commandment is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Second is what? Love your neighbor as yourself. Paul said that the whole commandment is summed up in one word. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And that's what he calls us to do. You and I are to live a life in which every day as we have opportunity, we are to do a golden deed by helping those who are in need. We sing about doing that. Have we done it? Are we continuing to do it? We have done it. Are we continuing to do it? We've closed down our kitchen. And we're no longer serving meals. We're still making a few deliveries, but they're far and few between. But what about how we're still reaching out? Are we just reaching out to people to say, how are you doing? Are you doing okay? Is everything going well? Are you getting back on your feet now? Can I encourage you in some way? That's what we need to keep doing. Reaching out, letting others know we care. Where are you in the scheme of things? I asked you at the beginning, when you look at your life, where is your life? What truly motivates you? What truly identifies you as a person? Is it that you have a deep love for God, that you want to serve Him, and you want to glorify Him? If you can't say yes to that, stop and ask yourself, why am I living my life? What am I hoping to achieve? And I want to encourage you to put Christ first. If this morning you're not a Christian, you've never obeyed the gospel, you've never put Christ on in baptism, you've never turned, you're still living that life in which you're just trying to get ahead, and you really don't think the church has anything or Christ has anything to offer you, I want to ask you to reconsider that. If you need to respond to our Lord's invitation this morning, come believing in Him, confessing His name, and being buried with Him in baptism, then the invitation is for you. Will you come as together we stand and sing?